Call the next case.
Case number 11-1330, PMCM TV LLC Appellant versus Federal Communications Commission. Mr. Evans for Appellant, Mr. Marcus for Appellee.
We have all the blue suits back.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Don Evans on behalf of PMCM TV. Your Honors, I think this is one of the strongest Chevron 1 cases I've ever seen in my career, and I'd like to jump right into Chevron 1. You know the drill better than anybody, probably. If the meaning of the statute is clear, then we basically ignore what the agency says about it, because this court makes the determination of what the statute means. And in making that determination, we look at the text of the statute, the legislative history, the structure, and the purpose of the statute. What we don't look at, and what we don't need to look at, is to chase rabbits like the FCC did. They spent 2.5 years conjuring up applications of the statute which were not before it, and ended up rejecting our application of the statute, which presented none of the complications that the FCC was worried about. Our proposals are completely consistent with all of the FCC's technical criteria and all of the FCC's channel allocations criteria technically.
Can I just ask you about that? It probably is that I'm just really not understanding, so help me here. So I appreciate it's not this case, but is it your position that someone could get a station in Nevada with a certain channel, and if that channel were not in New Jersey, but was in New York, that they could move the station to New Jersey, notwithstanding the fact that there would be substantial interference with the New York station?
Well, when you say substantial interference, I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, so
substantial that neither of the stations could operate?
Yes.
Okay, well,
that's
the extreme case.
What about that?
You have to ask yourself, why would anybody do that?
Because then they could charge the New York station. Then they could hold up the New York station and say, we're going to drive your signal off until you pay us $1 million, $2 million, whatever.
Okay, let's take your assumption and assume that that's the case. It hasn't happened in the last 30 years. It's not presented.
The whole thing hasn't happened in the last 30 years, right? No one's done this before.
There was one application of it 30 years
one,
ago. Nobody has done what you've suggested.
No one has done what you're suggesting. The only one that's ever been done is the one that was specifically thought of with respect to the legislative history. That one was.
Theoretically, somebody could have gone into Delaware in the last 30 years and done exactly
and theoretically,
what
somebody could have done what you did, but nobody did. So therefore, we're looking at this as hypothetical.
Well, let's look at it hypothetically. If you force me into that corner and say somebody's going to do something which I think would be economically suicidal, but let's take into account your hypothetical, I think the answer is found in both in the statute and in the previous decision of this court with respect to multi-state, which is the command of the statute is extremely broad. It said, notwithstanding any other provision of law, this court said that those words mean that all impediments that would prevent the movement of a licensee.
Well, the answer is yes, they could do it.
I would say yes.
All right. So if we were to hold your way today, anybody could get a station in another part of the country with no real interest in broadcasting it, and then move it to a station that interferes in a big city market and refuse to leave without a hold-up payment. I just want to know whether that's possible.
Well, remember, that presumes that the FCC is going to continue to disobey the first sentence of Section 331, which is that they would continue to not put a VHF station into any state where it's technically feasible. But if the commission continues to do that, yes, I guess that would be possible. And, you know, in a certain sense, the statute would be easier to accept if Congress had put in a technical feasibility proviso in there, but they didn't. The statute is a sledgehammer. It
It's only a sledgehammer if we agree with your interpretation of the word reallocate. If we agree with the FCC's interpretation of the word reallocate, it's not a sledgehammer.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. The Commission's discussion of the word reallocate strikes me as a situation where the agency was desperately looking at the terms of the statute to come up with some word.
Why don't you focus on the language of the statute instead of the agency's motive? Okay, that's what we look at here. The agency's position is that the word reallocate is ambiguous.
Okay. The word reallocate is
and
not.
And they say it has a broad meaning, which you offer, and a narrow meaning, which it offers.
Well.
And so, setting aside motive, what's your answer to that question?
Okay. My answer to that question is that the term reallocate was, over really the last 40 or 50 years that I'm familiar with, the term reallocate has been used simply to mean any change in a channel allocation, either different channel is allocated to a community or a channel is allocated to a different community. That's the way it's always used colloquially. That's the way it's always been used by the FCC. Neither I nor the FCC were able to find any case in the FCC's annals where the term reallocate was deemed to refer only to the narrow definition that the FCC would now ascribe to it. And certainly, when Congress used the word,
has there been a reallocation? You told me that this yours is the first, other than the one in New Jersey, the original one, where there's been a reallocation.
No, in the FCC's history, there are frequently reallocations of channels. That happens all the time. Matter of fact, in the old days, this court saw a lot of cases that dealt with de facto.
Did any of them involve a situation where there wouldn't otherwise have been a frequency interference? Because otherwise, there's no test case for your claim.
All I can tell you is that reallocations of the type that we are proposing were certainly permitted under the FCC's rules. I couldn't find any case that specifically says that is a, quote, reallocation, but I couldn't find any cases that says that's not a reallocation. And maybe more to the point, when Congress used the word reallocate, they clearly did not have ascribe any special meaning to that term. In fact,
that's,
Senator Bradley.
That's the definition of an ambiguous term. That's why terms and statutes are ambiguous, because Congress does not use it precisely and leaves to the agency flexibility to flesh it out.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is not that the term was ambiguous.
That's inconsistent with your entire argument.
No, I'm saying that the term was not ambiguous. It was just used in its ordinary sense. There was no need to ascribe a particular meaning to it because it just means what it means. It means change. Just look at the words, and I couldn't find a definition of it in the dictionary because reallocate doesn't appear because of the re. All it means is taking an allocation and changing it to something else. That's the way it's always used in the FCC cases, and there's not a single place in any FCC decision that says that it's only limited to the precise definition.
Your very first sentence when you started up, your second sentence after you said the case was a no-brainer, was that we look at purpose also at Chevron 1, right?
Yes, sir.
I still don't understand from your answers to Judge Garland why Congress would have passed a law that the relocation of a station in a situation where it would create interference when the entire purpose of the Communications Act is to avoid that problem. That's what I don't get.
I just don't
understand. Now, you tell us, well, no one would do it, it's not economically feasible, but I still don't see why Congress would have done that, particularly in a, what is this? Is this a rider to... This was not exactly a well-thought-through piece of legislation, was it? Wasn't this a rider to a...
It actually had come up in different forms for several years. Mm-hmm. Senator Bradley was trying to get something like this enacted for several years. Okay. And ultimately, yes, it was put into a rider.
In fact, the statute's got typos in it.
It does have typos.
It's not exactly the kind of statute which would...
So do others.
Well... To me, the language of the statute is so simple and so straightforward that it seems to me it probably wasn't written by a lawyer. It's that simple and straightforward. But also, it was not written on the back of a napkin. This is something that was in the works for many, many years. And I don't know why there are typos in it, but...
How many? Do you know how many states don't have VHF?
Right now? Well, of course, Delaware and New Jersey didn't have them, and the FCC ran in and backfilled by allocating new channels after this case came up. Right now, only the Virgin Islands and the U.S. territories are treated as states for this purpose, does not have a VHF channel. It had VHF channels before the DTV transition.
Of the 50 states, I realize they're counted, but of the 50 states, do they all have a VHF channel now?
Yes.
So the hypothetical's not a concern.
That's right. I mean, the FCC is worried about something that is almost certainly never going to happen.
Maybe it could be a concern, though, because they could drop out. You know, the way the market works, they could drop out of some states, and then this issue would arise again.
Well, the concern I was raising is that the FCC itself,
concern for the territories.
Well, the FCC itself could actually do what it did in the DTV transition and take away the VHF allocations that are there now. That's what it did. It stripped New Jersey of its existing VHF allocation, and it stripped the Virgin Islands of its VHF allocation in the course of a rulemaking proceeding. Who would have thought that the commission would do that? But that's what they did.
How long have all the states had VHF stations?
Since, Delaware and New Jersey didn't have them. We filed our notifications in 2009. The commission...
But before Delaware and New Jersey not having them, was there a period when some more substantial number didn't have them, or did they all have them for throughout most of this?
For a long period of time, I can't tell you exactly how long, most of the states had VHF TV allocations, and that's why it was such a concern to Senator Bradley that New Jersey and Delaware did not have them in 1982.
Those were the only states in 1982?
Those were the only two states in 1982, and those were the two states that Congress was particularly concerned about being sure that they had the opportunity, using the mechanism provided by Section 331, to get a VHF station allocated to their state.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Joel Marcus for the FCC. I think, Judge Tatel, you put your finger right on the central question in this case, which is, why would Congress have written a statute that would so easily allow interference, particularly in major markets like New York and Philadelphia? And I think the answer to that question is that Congress didn't write that statute.
Well, isn't the answer that Senator Bradley was very upset about New Jersey's situation and wanted that solved under any means necessary?
Well, I think that goes to the heart of it, Judge Kavanaugh. He didn't want it solved by any means necessary because he wrote a statute that has two sentences, and they can't be interpreted out of context with one another.
Mm-hmm.
The first sentence of the statute says, you must do it. That's the Senator Bradley concern. You must do it. This was overriding the commission's earlier ruling that the court had affirmed that the UHF stations were good enough under 307 of the Communications Act. And Bradley said, you must do it, but he issued a very important proviso, which was, you must do it if it's technically feasible. It was, the statute is very concerned with feasibility.
Why wouldn't they have put technical feasibility into the second sentence?
Well, because I think that it's a reasonable reading of the statute to say that you shouldn't have two parts of the same statute that do violence to one another. And the Congress was plainly concerned about technical feasibility. And it simply doesn't make any sense for Congress to say, well, the FCC, the agency that we've created to do this kind of stuff, should only do it if it's technically feasible. But if it's not technically feasible, then anybody can just come and drive a truck through
the whole place. That would give, this picks up on Judge Tatel's question on the top side, but it seems to me, thinking about what Congress was trying to do, other than just Senator Bradley wanted New Jersey to have a station, which I think was probably the primary motivation, that Congress was using the second sentence as a tool to encourage, one might say, the FCC to do this through the first sentence.
Well, I think if you're talking about a kind of interorum effect,
yes.
You know, holding the gun and saying, well, yes. if you don't do this, then you're going to have some trouble on your hands.
Yes.
That would be crazy, quite frankly.
And Congress has never done that.
I think that it may be true that Congress has done that, but I think we all have a duty.
Congress does that all the time, actually, as they put in things that will happen if you don't do X, then you're going to get X
I think, therefore,
you better do X.
I think we all have a duty to try to construe statutes so that they don't do things that are crazy. And there's a very good construction of this statute that doesn't achieve that.
In this case, Senator Bradley had in mind a reallocation along the lines of the one the FCC has in mind.
Absolutely.
That is, one that would not create a frequency interference issue, and
right.
It was specifically mentioned in the legislative history which one he had in mind.
Right. He had in a particular station that he had personally been trying to get moved to New Jersey. He had filed a petition called a petition to reallocate, by the way, to move that particular station to New Jersey. And when we're talking about moving the station, we're literally not even talking about moving the antenna, the transmitter of the station. We're talking about just moving the mailing address of the station, the office. That had a regulatory effect.
Judge Garland's question causes me to ask, your position would prohibit this even when it is technically feasible.
I think that's right, and that's for two reasons.
And that's why there's a mismatch either way here on the technical feasibility, because a petitioner's position would mean that you could do this kind of movement even when it was going to cause major interference, so that's a problem.
Right.
But your position would prevent it even when it's technically feasible, and that seems to be a problem, too.
Well, I think under those circumstances, you would do it through a comparative hearing, right?
That's exactly. Well, we don't do comparative hearings anymore.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah. But the whole we would allocate a station according to longstanding FCC rules about where stations and how stations should be allocated, and then we would have it would now, Judge Tatel, be an auction process,
right.
Which is exactly what we did.
Notwithstanding any other provision of law, so the whole idea was you don't have to go through that, I thought.
Well, no, I think that,
so
that
if we
that's...
read, if we read in your technically feasible limitation...
I think, Judge Kavanaugh, that what the commission did, and I think this is most clearly stated at paragraph 23 of the order, but it's also in paragraphs 14 and in 20, but the commission said, this is a JA-208, we do not think Congress intended for Section 331A to operate as a substitute for the normal allocation procedures where, as here, the commission can fulfill the statutory mandate using those procedures.
But it says notwithstanding.
And so
because
what
is... I read all that.
Okay.
And so what I've thought is, okay, maybe we can put the technical feasibility thing into the second sentence, just even though it's not there. Or maybe you can. But then the question is, your interpretation goes far beyond that.
Well, no, I think it all gets put into the word reallocate. What did Congress mean when it said reallocate?
I think you just said... Senator Bradley's petition for reallocate was just a move. Didn't you say that?
It was when he had previously used the word reallocate in his
Senator
petition.
Senator Bradley was using it.
He used it in the extremely narrow meaning that the commission.
Well, the only way he could have used it was in the context of that particular move. Correct.
Right. Exactly. And I think that it all goes to demonstrate that Senator Bradley was very concerned about preserving technical feasibility. Otherwise, he could have written a statute that just said the FCC shall allocate a VHF station to every state without regard to any technical feasibility. Or it could have said the FCC shall allocate a station, a VHF, to every state, even if that would violate other FCC policies. I think one thing that's going on in the first sentence of the statute, as well as the technical part of this, Judge Kavanaugh, is that the Congress was preserving the FCC's role, its central role. This is what they created us for. This is what we do, and we have the central
role.
Why
have the second sentence?
You have the second sentence precisely to allow the override in the oddball, one-off WOR situation, because the first sentence would not have gotten you WOR.
A lot more clearly tailored to the WOR situation. I know we can say that in every case, and we often do.
We don't know what exactly went on in that late-night smoke-filled room where they were writing this typographical error-laden statute on the back of an envelope, but the fact is that...
Those are sometimes the clearest ones. The ones that take months and years are not always crystal clear.
But Congress had in mind a very specific circumstance. It wrote a broader statute, but it wrote a statute that if you only interpret one sentence of it and you interpret that, it literally works results that are crazy. And I think that that's what puts the second sentence of the statute in tension with the first sentence of the statute. And I think that that tension, the undermining of the policies that are implicit in the first sentence of the statute, are what make this case just like the Bell Atlantic case.
So is it absurdity, Cannon? You just said results that are crazy.
Well, crazy, absurdity. I think that the idea...
I don't think that was invoked, though, was it?
Pardon me. Excuse me?
The commission, are you invoking the absurdity?
The commission certainly did in paragraph 20 of the order, where... This is paragraph 20 appears
at... relying on that here, though.
At JA 205. I don't think we're relying exclusively on an absurdity, although that's an aspect of this.
Yeah, that the statute's ambiguous. You're relying on the word reallocate.
Right. It's that the statute is ambiguous and that the ambiguity is crystallized by the word reallocate, and that the statute is at odds with itself if you interpret it in any way other than the reallocate meaning a very narrow situation rather than a very broad situation.
What about the question, just the factual question, are there other states without VHF?
Right now there are no other states without VHF. There are no states at all without VHF since the commission actually accorded a VHF. But there are several states that have only one VHF, including Connecticut, which is, right outside the New York metropolitan area. And the commission, by direction of Congress, has a incentive auction program that's coming up whereby people will be entitled to ultimately give up their station allotments. And so, I can't tell you whether this will happen again. Maybe, maybe not. But
one in Connecticut?
There's only one station in Connecticut. I don't know where it's licensed to. Probably New Haven. This situation could conceivably come up again, and it could come up again in the New York metropolitan area. Where?
So what about the market? Judge Garland's question and counsel talked about. Maybe your answer is what Judge Garland said. Why doesn't the market solve this in some way? It's not implausible to think that the crazy results would be resolved by the marketplace.
Well, I think there's the kind of terrorism effect that Judge Garland was referring to. I think there's also the cable carriage issue here, which is when you get into a market as a VHF, as a broadcast station, you're entitled to must-carry rights on cable systems, DBS systems in most cases, Fios, whatever. And so you can actually take your, $75,000 station that you acquired in Wyoming and turn it into the equivalent of a, major city VHF station in the New York metropolitan area. So that there are...
Without having to go through an auction.
Without going through an auction, right, and without even facing any competitive applications. And so you wind up basically, pulling a fast one on the citizenry of the U.S. And so there are economic incentives to do this, even in the interference situation. Yeah. So I think ultimately, this case boils down to a confusing statute that has two parts that are in tension with each other, and in interpreting the word reallocate, a word that had no fixed meaning, in a narrow way, the commission resolved the internal tensions to the statute. And
what about your opponent's claim
meaning
that it's always been used in the way that he's saying it's been used?
Well, the word reallocate has appeared in commission decisions a small handful of times. Every single one of those times involved the move of a station, that's true, but in each one of those moves, it's been a move, from one nearby place to another nearby place where the signals would have overlapped each other. One time the commission also used the word reallocate where it deleted a station and then put the exact same station back into the place where it had been deleted from. So that is equivalent to the same situation. The word reallocate is not actually a standard commission word. That's why it only appears just a handful of times.
It's just an ordinary word. That's the thing.
Well,
it didn't. This whole process, the back of the envelope, they just used a term that's kind of common sense that will agree to the reallocation of its Channel 2A community within a state.
Well, but nobody really knows what exactly that means, and what it's clear that what Senator Bradley had in mind when he used that was.
But that's not your argument, is it? I mean, isn't your argument that the word is ambiguous and the commission's interpretation is reasonable?
Oh,
you're not telling us that.
No, I'm not telling you.
Interpret reallocate in the way Senator Bradley thought of it, may have thought about it in this circumstance.
Well, we're not arguing that it should be. That it must be interpreted that way. We ultimately basically interpreted it the way Senator Bradley seems to have had in mind. But the gist of the argument is that reallocate is sufficiently ambiguous to allow the commission to resolve the internal tensions in the statute by construing that word narrowly.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions, we submit that the FCC's order
should
be affirmed.
Thank you. See, I think Mr. Evans had used up his time, right? You can take 2 minutes if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. Since Judge Tatel, you seem to have a question in your mind about whether reallocate really is an ambiguous term, let's turn to the Chevron 2 analysis very quickly, which I didn't really get into in my earlier presentation. I actually think our Chevron 2 case is even stronger than our Chevron 1 case. Because one thing we haven't talked at all about is what the purpose of the statute was. Everybody agrees that the purpose of the statute was to permit a station to transfer its license into an unserved state, specifically New Jersey. That's what the whole thing was about. The commission's interpretation exactly defeats that statutory purpose. Secondly, the legislative intent clearly says that the intent of Congress is that every state should have a VHF TV station.
It wouldn't have and didn't defeat it in that particular case, though. Right?
In this particular case,
In your case, yes, but not in the case Bradley had in mind.
Not in that case, but in this case, New Jersey was without a commercial VHF allocation. We proposed to put that one to put a station in there, exactly what Senator Bradley would have wanted, and the commission's interpretation prevents that. It's the exact opposite of the statutory purpose. The legislative intent says every state should have a VHF station, and the mechanism of Section 331 should be available to accomplish that purpose if every state doesn't have that. That's a very important part of the legislative intent, because the commission's interpretation completely precludes that possibility for states like Alaska, Hawaii, the U.S.
territories. Couldn't someone, even you, apply for the license in New Jersey?
Could someone apply for it?
And then there would be an auction if someone competed for it. And New Jersey would have a VHF station.
If the commission had allocated it on its own?
Yeah.
Yeah, if the commission had allocated it on its own, which it easily could have done it. Right. In 2007, the commission could have done that, but it refused to do that, which I think casts some doubt on the commission's whole point that as long as it's technically feasible to put a VHF station into a state, Congress could trust the commission to go ahead and do that, because in this case, in the record of Section 331, the commission has demonstrated that it will not put a VHF station into a state, even when it's technically feasible. Thirdly, the commission's interpretation, as we pointed out, the whole cornerstone of their interpretation of the statute is that under their interpretation, there can't possibly be technical interference. We very easily came up with a hypothetical, Judge Garland, if we're talking about hypotheticals, in which there would be technical interference caused even under the FCC's interpretation of the statute. And if you follow their own reasoning, that means their interpretation can't possibly be correct.
It does seem like a less likely hypothetical. It requires a double move, right?
Right.
I wouldn't say I think that's more likely, actually. But in any case, it's a hypothetical. And under the commission's interpretation, if hypothetically any technical interference could happen, then you have to reject that interpretation. The next thing is that The commission changed its rules a few years ago to remove the impediments that had actually existed for stations, for close-in stations changing their community of license to another state. In other words, exactly the type of thing that happened between New York and New Jersey in 1982. Now there's no impediment to that. Any station that's next to a state could go ahead and do that without any impediment, without the fear of a competing application being filed against it. The only stations that still face that impediment are faraway stations, because the commission expressly excluded those from the relief that was granted in 1989. So what we end up with is an interpretation of the statute where the only stations that would benefit by the statute aren't allowed to do so, and the only stations that could use the statute don't need to because the impediment isn't there anymore. The last thing is that the commission makes a big deal about harmonizing Section 331 with all of the other provisions that it usually applies in allocating channels. That's exactly contrary to what Section 331 is intended to accomplish. Section 331 is supposed to, and this court found, that it overrides and displaces all the normal procedures that the FCC applies. So when the FCC forthrightly and candidly admits we are trying to squeeze Section 331 into our normal 307B policies and everything else that we rely on, that tells you right away that their methodology is wrong, because that's not what Section 331 is about. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted.